Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading, I Worked a Convenience Store. One of my regulars is terrifying. This is by Orange Peeler from Reddit. I hope you enjoy it. And stick around to the end where I beg you to like this video and subscribe, or else I will live on the street. I'm just kidding about that though. Let's get started. Damn, you look pathetic, man. My coworker, his baggy eyes sinking down like a bloodhound, couldn't contain his snort as he swung the plastic swinging door open for me. I scowled at him with as much hatred as I could muster. Shut up, idiot. I shoved past him, squeezing between his slouching form and the shelves of electronic cigarettes contained in their bright fluorescent boxes, screaming out sour raspberry crush and cotton candy at whoever's eyes inevitably drifted to their section behind the register. The truth was, he was right. I looked pathetic. I felt it too. I felt like a slug stuck to the bottom of God's shoe. I slammed my bag down on the counter, careful not to bump my cast against anything. I had already made that mistake of carelessness and paid the price heavily. Zeke held his hands up in surrender, his Cheeto-stained fingertips glowing faintly orange in the fluorescent lighting. My bad, dude. I knew it was rough. I just didn't know how rough. You look like an injury lawsuit billboard. I waved him off, pretending I couldn't be bothered to turn my head back to look at him, ignoring the reality that my neck brace physically wouldn't allow it. Just go. Get out of here. Zeke yawned and slung his jacket over his shoulder. Don't have to tell me twice. See ya. I watched him circle around to the break room to leave out the back door, pulling our metal stool up to the register with my ankle. I couldn't be mad at him for pointing out how pathetic I looked, because it was true. Just how I couldn't judge his dark eye bags when I imagined mine looked 10 times worse. Sometimes it felt like there was a hierarchy in the convenience store, a power struggle. Zeke worked from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., and I stepped in to take the torch until 6. Sometimes, when I was especially displeased with the night shift, I imagined him as a fat king eating grapes and drinking wine from the bottle at home. It was more likely that he played Call of Duty and took bong rips until he passed out, knowing him. I always convinced myself I liked being alone. But every night the second Zeke left, it felt like reality began to fade. As a gas station convenience store at night was like a portal, like some spot between dimensions, half there and half not. It felt like being in a school during summer vacation or visiting a completely empty water park, slightly wrong. I sat for a while just watching out the window until I couldn't stand the encroaching boredom. When that happened, I slipped my headphones over my ears and shuffled to the fridges in the back, cracking open a Red Bull and getting started on my nightly menial tasks. I just finished sweeping the floors when the bell on the door jingled, signaling my first customer of the night. I shrugged my headphones to rest awkwardly around my neck brace, calling out a greeting. It turned out to be a very tired-looking woman, who swayed in place and smiled sleepily at me when I joined her at the counter. Hey, she said, can you put 30 bucks on 4? Sure thing. She handed me a 20 and 2 fives. I could feel her looking me up and down, but I ignored it as I rang her up.
What happened to you, if you don't mind me asking? She said finally, as if she'd mustered up the courage.
She pulled the hood of her sweatshirt up over her greasy hair, as if she had to hide after giving in to her curiosity. I waved her off like a hand Zeke, struggling to keep the polite smile on my face. I'm fine, it's just an accident. Once the woman left, I had watched her dinky Chevy Cruze peel off down the road. I pushed my headphones back up and cranked up the Joy Division playing from my phone. I didn't feel like finishing the sweeping. I checked the time, 12:05, and sighed loudly. I wondered if I could get away with sneaking to the back to take a quick nap, but I knew my boss would check the security cameras and then she would have my ass. I unwrapped a chocolate bar from next to the cash register, making a mental note of how much I owed the till so far. I gave a knowing look to the camera in the corner, pointing to the candy like, I know, I'll pay for it. I popped the entire second half into my mouth, feeling it melt on my tongue, and crumpled the wrapper in a half moon around my index finger. Stared at it for a while, feeling strangely guilty. It was funny how many hours I worked just to end up fat and broke anyways. And it was because during the night shift there was nothing to do but eat. I did a few more tasks before retreating back behind the counter. I was beginning to drift off with my head on my arms when a strange feeling washed over me. Something felt off.
An odd, hot chill crept up the back of my neck, and I felt suddenly, violently frustrated that I couldn't scratch it. I felt like I was being watched. When I looked up, there was a man in front of me. I nearly toppled backwards off my stool, and my arm and head ached sympathetically at the mere concept of falling on them. The man didn't say anything. He just stood in front of me, smiling at me. He had brown hair neatly moused back, and clear, if not slightly pale, skin. I would have guessed he was about 45, but I couldn't tell for certain. The first thing I noticed was that smile, which stretched across his face a little too widely for, I checked the time again, 2:36 a.m., and displayed his sparkling white teeth. The second thing I noticed was his eyes. I couldn't quite tell what color they were, because they were enveloped by his pupils. One pupil appeared larger than the other, but they were both too big. I immediately wondered if he was on something, although his crisp suit suggested otherwise. "Good evening," I said, choking on the words, quickly taking off my headphones. "I'm sorry, how long were you standing there?" He didn't answer my question. He just placed a few things down on the counter. Two little bottles of vodka, those 90-proof ones with a million different flavors, and a tuna sandwich wrapped up in plastic. Then he pointed. At first I thought he was pointing at me. My blood went cold, but then I followed his gaze to the shelves of cigarettes behind me. "American spirits," he said. His voice was crisp and clear, just like his suit. "Please." I swallowed. Something about him deeply unnerved me. He had the demeanor and gait of a plastic surgeon, someone a little out of touch with reality, someone with a little too much work done. Why was he at a gas station in the middle of nowhere this early in the morning in such a nice suit? I swore I had been gazing sleepily out the windows at the empty parking lot moments before. Why hadn't I seen him get here? "Good choice," I mumbled, glancing at him nervously as I reached for the cigarettes behind me. I didn't want to turn my back to him for some reason. "Those are my favorite." He nodded, his smile growing a tiny bit bigger. I rung him up as quickly as I could. $24, please." He dug in his pocket and then handed over the money in cash. When I took it, I noticed a slight dark red tint under his fingernails. I followed his hand with my eyes up to his neck, where he scratched at somewhere his collar concealed. When his hand moved, I saw more red staining the white fabric and a few tiny splotches. "Hey man, are you alright?" I asked reluctantly. "Are you hurt or something? Do you need me to call someone?" The man's smile didn't falter, but he mouthed something very quickly, almost like he was trying to speak, but the words wouldn't come out. I could hear the faint sound of a whisper. I squinted at his lips and leaned closer, trying to make out what it could be. "Do I seem happy to you?" He spoke so abruptly, and I was focusing so intently on his mouth that I nearly jumped again. "What? What, you think that my life is good and will remain good?" I looked him over. Nice clothes, big smile. He looked successful, but I didn't know about happy. "Sure." He stared at me for another few seconds. His pupils seemed to contract a little, and his eyes bore into me. However, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't look away. "Take care of yourself," he said cheerfully, and then he gathered up his purchases and he left. After that, I felt shaky. I didn't want to stay there at the counter in case he came back, so I slinked out the back, clumsily putting on my jacket with one arm and feeling for my box of American spirits. It took me an embarrassingly long amount of time to light up. My body, awkwardly leaning against the wall and my knobby knees crammed against my chest. I couldn't wait to get my cast off. As I smoked and tried to calm down, I found myself staring straight ahead, into the dark woods that surrounded the gas station. The trees towered over me, completely still except for the slight sway caused by the chilling breeze that hummed through the air. In those trees, I could make out a strange shape. One that moved a little differently from the other foliage, that almost looked like a person. When I finally got home at 6:30, I was so relieved I almost cried. I slumped back on my bed watching the dim sunlight start to creep through my bedroom blinds. That was another con of the night shift. I didn't get to sleep until it was bright outside. I rolled onto my good side, taking my phone out of my pocket and scrolling through a few notifications from my friends that I had ignored, under the guise of being at work. I knew it didn't fool them. Being at work had never stopped me from texting them back before, but they couldn't say anything about it. I just wasn't ready yet. "Hey, sorry, home now. Going to bed, good night." I tossed my phone on a pile of dirty laundry after I hit send, and gingerly laid my head on my pillow. I thought I wasn't even tired. I would just close my eyes for a second, but when I opened them, it was already golden hour and my stomach was grumbling. I sighed and scrubbed at my face with my clammy palms. It was so depressing to sleep all day sometimes. I clumsily shoved an off-brand frozen pizza into the toaster oven with my non-broken hand, ate it in a few bites and badly burned my mouth, sat down at my computer for what felt like a second, and before I knew it, it was time for work again. The drive to work always felt sort of eerie to me. By the time I had gotten into my car, it had begun to rain, and my puny old windshield wiper struggled to keep up with the heavy downpour. I really did work in the middle of nowhere. It was about a 15-minute drive away from my studio apartment, and I lived on the edge of town as it was. The road was gravelly and crowded by trees, so crowded I always began to feel very claustrophobic, for a while, right before it opened up into the grove where the gas station waited. If you kept driving, it would be another hour until you reached anything substantial. Anything besides other gas stations or dilapidated sheds. It made me think of the man from the night before. Where had he been going? I pulled in next to Zeke's car and I ran inside with my good arm sheltering my hair the entire way. "Hey!" I called out as I shoved open the swinging door, the bell jingling cheerfully to greet me. "Man, it's really coming down." Zeke wasn't behind the counter. There was no response for a moment and began to feel uneasy. But then he called out from the back and I sighed in relief. "I know." He came out, carrying a cardboard box in his arms. "It's crap. I hate the rain." I squeezed the rain out of my hair carefully and was suddenly infuriatingly aware of the mind-numbing itchiness of the water trapped between my skin and my neck brace. "Hey." I slipped in behind the counter and he set the box down next to me. It read snacks on the side in fresh black Sharpie. "Did you see anyone weird today?" He gave me a suspicious look, shrugging on his hoodie.
Not any weirder than usual."
"Oh, okay." I swallowed and picked at the skin around my nails. "I was just wondering, last night there was this weird guy." Zeke checked his phone, not really paying attention.
"That's so weird. I gotta go. Tell me about it tomorrow."
I rolled my eyes and nodded.
"Okay, whatever. See ya."
"See ya." Like the night before, I didn't realize how lonely it was until he was gone. But unlike the night before, now I felt like I had a reason to feel strange. I listened to the rain come down against the roof and tried to hone in on my work, lugging the box of snacks over to the shelves to restock. There were a few customers who came and went like always. And between catering to them and immersing myself in tasks and my cranked up music, I almost forgot all about the strange man. Things felt normal again, and I was just an employee working in a convenience store as I always had been. That was until 2 came around again. At 2, it finally stopped raining, and the sudden silence began to make me feel unsettled. At 2:15, I took my smoke break, and when I came back inside around 2:30, something felt different. I hung up my damp jacket, taking my sweet time with it. I didn't want to go out there yet. When I finally decided to suck it up, and I peered around the doorframe of the break room, he was there, standing in front of the counter, staring. I bit down hard on the inside of my cheek and tasted blood. "Hello?" I called out, walking over to the register. "Good evening. Back again?" He didn't say anything. I hadn't really expected him to. His smile seemed more shrunken than the night before, and so did his pupils. His skin looked a little less clear, a little more gray. His suit seemed disheveled, although I couldn't quite put my finger on why, and this time I could clearly see a spot of blood soaking through his collar. He scratched at it every few seconds, his hand lingering there, almost like he was trying to hide it from me. He was sort of hunched over now, as if he was in pain. He had placed the same items on the counter as the night before. 2 tiny bottles of vodka, 1 tuna sandwich. "American spirits, please," he said finally, his voice slightly scratchy. It sounded like the feeling of skinning your knee. I pressed my lips together and retrieved them for him. "What are you up to tonight?" I had to ask. I had to know. It made me so deeply uncomfortable that it circled around to twisted curiosity. The man laughed, but it didn't quite sound like a laugh. It sounded more like a cry. He took out 24 crumpled up dollars and placed them in front of me on the counter. "There are bad people out there," he told me, staring at me. I blinked a few times and nodded. "You're right." My voice broke a little. I couldn't help it. He gave me the creeps. The man seemed to like this answer. He took what he'd bought and smiled at me widely again. It looked almost painful to smile that wide. "Take care of yourself."
It took me a moment to process that he was leaving. When I finally did, I rushed around the counter to the door, wanting to see where he went, what he drove, something. I saw nothing, no trace. I cursed under my breath and sprinted as quickly as I could to the back room. I crouched in front of the big boxy work computer, typing in my password and signing into the security live cam. Rapidly, I flipped through them, searching for any that would have him on them. When I finally found one, I had to go back because I almost missed it. The man wasn't getting into a car, or even showing any signs of having one at all. He was walking straight back into the forest, his gait still strangely stiff and plastic. As soon as I saw him disappear between the trees, I turned off the computer and stared at my reflection in the black of the screen, unsure of what to think at all. "I'll work double hours," I mumbled, my face growing hot from my very apparent desperation. I hated to beg or to ask for anything at all, really, but I felt that it was necessary. I was on my last straw. Jody signed a piece of paper aggressively, as if she were trying to rip through it with the tip of her pen, and then brought the back end to her lips. Her unwashed hair, frizzy from application upon application of box black hair dye, was tied back in a ponytail, which made her look like she'd gotten work done. Maybe that was the intention. "Noah," she said in a long breath, like my name was just the byproduct of an exasperated sigh. She rubbed at her temples. "You know, I would love to help you, honey, but this is what you signed up for. Besides, I can't afford to pay you overtime." I just didn't want to spend another night waiting, wondering if that terrifying man was going to show up. My anxiety would kill me. I couldn't rest when I was at home either. His smile appeared in my dreams. It haunted me. Still, I hadn't expected her to say yes. She never did. I had taken this job because I desperately needed it, not for convenience, and she knew it. She knew she had all of the control. My boss stood, surveying the break room as if it was simply an act of habit. "I'm sorry that I can't change your schedule, Noah," she smiled sympathetically, in a way that was both saccharine and stiff. "Maybe ask me again in the future, and can you make sure to mop during your shifts? It's looking a little grimy in here." I didn't tell her about the man. I didn't see the point. She would just give me the same fake, sad smile and pat my shoulder. She would just tell me I was a little too old to believe in ghosts, and I couldn't possibly argue with that. I knew what time he would come. 2:36 a.m. exactly. It was always 2:36. At 1, I realized I hadn't seen any other customers since the day before. It wasn't like we bustled in the early hours of the morning, but there were always some. Some drunks, some stoners, some late-night road trippers, some homeless people. I couldn't remember the last time I saw zero customers during a shift. At 2, my arms began to prickle with goosebumps. I tried not to stare at the window, not sure I wanted to see him coming at this point, but my curiosity got the better of me. At 2:30, I saw something emerge from the trees. It was man-shaped, but hunched over, as if he had a particularly bad case of scoliosis, as if his very spine would be bent like a green twig over someone's knee. I knew it was him immediately. I watched him shuffle across the parking lot, one hand gripping my phone in my pocket so tightly with my good hand that I knew my knuckles had to be a splotchy mess of white and red, and I knew they would ache when I finally let go. After what felt like years, the door finally swung open. The bell sounded slightly wrong, like it was just barely off pitch when it jingled. The man moved slow, whether out of struggle or to torture me, I couldn't tell. His breath came out hitched and raspy, and in his hands he clutched a wad of cash as well as a slip of paper. I stared at it, but couldn't figure out what it was. "Why are you here?" I asked against my better judgment, as he collected the things he always got, 2 bottles of vodka and a tuna sandwich from the fridge. The man didn't answer, but I watched him begin to unfurl, clutching his purchases in his gnarled hands. He smiled at me as he walked towards the counter, his spine cracking and popping loudly as he stood up straighter. It was a disgusting, gruesome sound. When he stood up, I could see that his suit hardly looked like a suit anymore. It was very nearly torn to shreds, blood soaking through his white shirt in several places. I was frozen, and I felt like I couldn't physically move. Even when I was mentally able to tell my body what to do, I just stared at him as he slid his items towards me. "American spirits, please." I was finally able to back away, reaching behind me blindly for the pack of cigarettes.
I didn't know what to do. I just wanted him to leave. His eyes bore into me, his pupils now as small as pinpricks, and shuddering wildly like flies swimming across the whites of his eyes.
"Really stocking up on these, huh?"
I asked, my voice coming out weak. I didn't know what else to say.
"Yes,"
he rasped, his smile revealing the bright red gums and long yellow teeth.
"But I'll never smoke them. I can't."
He handed me the money. I took it, my hand shaking uncontrollably. The man then slowly held out the other piece of paper, turning it over so I could see it. The fluorescent lights buzzed loudly in my ears, making it impossible to think. It was a photograph. A photograph of two children, both with brown hair, gripping each other under a tree. Girl and a boy. Both were maybe around 6 or 7. Their faces were frozen in a laugh, the kind of laugh that only children can do, with their eyes scrunched up and their mouths open wide to the sky. I looked back up at the man, unsure of why he was showing me this. He was still staring at me.
"Do they look happy?"
I swallowed. My mouth was suddenly incredibly dry. I felt like I might suffocate.
"Me? Yeah?"
I muttered. All I could get out was a mutter. "They do." The man's smile faded, but just a little bit, and for a second, but I caught it. I could do nothing but catch it. He mouthed something very quickly, but this time I caught that too. They could have been. I felt like I might throw up. I just watched in horror, unable to do anything as he reached out and took my working hand, his dirty, blood-stained palm brushing against mine. I watched as he slowly bent every finger but my index. He stared into my face as he wrapped the photograph of the two children around my finger in a half moon.
"I know why you don't recognize me,"
he said then. I couldn't look up at him, couldn't look away from my hand. I thought about pulling away. I thought about running, locking myself in the break room and calling someone, dialing 911. What would the police even help with in this situation? What could they do? A foreboding sense of hopelessness washed over my entire body. I should call someone. I didn't know if he said it or if it was a thought. It bounced around in my head, a deafening whisper. I looked up at him. He wasn't smiling anymore, and his mouth wasn't moving.
"I should call someone."
"Get out of my head," I tried to say, but no words came out. I could only mouth it.
"I should call someone. I should call someone. I should call someone. I should call someone. I should. I should. I should. I should."
They could have been. They could have been. They could have been. I didn't go to work after that. I left in the middle of the night and drove home, completely numb and barely even conscious. I lay in my bed for what was probably days, with my curtains drawn. I ignored the calls from my boss, from Zeke, from my friends. I knew I was fired. I knew I was destroying my own life. But it somehow felt better than the alternative of seeing that man again. I didn't care anymore. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't get him out of my head. When I was able to sleep, I dreamed of a time when I was a kid. I'd been skateboarding down the hill next to my house. There was that sweet spot period where I hadn't injured myself enough yet to be scared of things, so careening down an asphalt death slope only had my heart racing in excitement. But that was about to change. At the last second, a neighbor's dog, a little terrier, ran out in front of me. I remember it so vividly. It wasn't nearly enough time to stop or get out of the way, and I collided with the little creature at an extremely high speed. I remember skidding across the pavement, my knees and the palms of my hands torn to shreds. I knew the dog hadn't survived immediately. I could just feel it. I was so sad for the dog, but I was also angry because I was hurt, and I was scared of facing the consequences of coming clean, so I didn't tell anyone, ever. In reality, it had died nearly instantly. In my dreams, though, the dog is still alive, but barely. Its face is bloody and ripped apart by the wheels of my skateboard, and it has his voice, raspy and barely there. "I know why you don't recognize me, looking like this." I woke up one night to something loud. I sat up quickly and cried out at the deep, stabbing pain in my neck. It sounded like metal grinding and gasoline spilling onto pavement. I could smell the smoke, thick, hot, and poisonous in my nostrils and filling up my lungs. And then, faintly in the distance, I could swear I heard a voice. I knew exactly who it was. I left my room as if I was still dreaming. It wasn't that I wanted to.
I just knew there was no real choice. There was no avoiding what waited for me. It felt weird to open the front door after so long, like opening a portal to a forgotten world, and as soon as I did, I saw him. There was no metal, no gasoline, just the man. He lay in front of my door, his body horrifically twisted and crumpled into an empty half-moon shape like the wrapper of my chocolate bar. He wasn't wearing his suit. He wasn't smiling. He was wearing what looked like used to be pajamas, but now could barely even do their job of concealing his flesh. At where his shoulder met his throat, a yellowish-white bone protruded out of him, gushing blood onto my doorstep. His face was unrecognizable from how it had looked in the convenience store. "I know why you don't recognize me." He looked up at me, but only with his eyes. The rest of his body was still, except for an occasional twitch. His lips parted and began to try and speak. All he could do was mouth the words, "Help me." I knelt down in front of him, tears springing to my eyes and then streaming down my cheeks. "I'm sorry," I whispered. "I'm so sorry, I should have called someone." I got up and I walked to my car. I drove all the way to where it happened, to that claustrophobic part of the road, in silence, my hands shaking against the steering wheel. Now I'm sitting here, next to the tree that man's car had wrapped around. It's bent and cracked down the middle, and there's a hint of spinning tires and dried blood still on the pavement. But other than that, there's no evidence of what happened here a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to call the police. I'm going to tell them everything. I'll tell them about the night it happened, how my friends had been messaging me all day, begging me to skip work and meet them at the bar, and how I had felt so isolated recently working the night shift. I'll tell them how I offered Zeke $100 to cover my shift, and he'd agreed because he didn't have anything better to do, and how I'd been drinking at work that day, not wanting to front the cost of buying watered-down drinks at the bar. I'll tell the police how I left before Zeke even got there, because I knew he'd be able to tell I was tipsy, right at 2:36 a.m., how I picked out two little bottles of flavored vodka to sneak in and a tuna sandwich to hopefully soak up some of the alcohol before my drive, which I didn't plan on eating. I just wanted to feel morally just. The fresh pack of American Spirits I shoved in my back pocket before tucking $24 into the till. I'll tell them about how I knew I wasn't driving great, and how I was going too fast, but I didn't slow down. I'll tell them about seeing the car coming in the opposite lane, the headlights making me squint, right at the most narrow part of the road, and how I swerved into their lane. I'll tell the police about swerving back out of his lane right at the last second and slamming on the brakes, nicking a tree, the airbags deploying, the cracking sound and the deep excruciating pain in my neck and my right arm. I'll tell them about getting out of my car and witnessing what I'd caused, and how I immediately threw up on the side of the road. His car had been completely crushed around a tree after he'd spun out of control to avoid hitting me, crumpled into a half-moon shape. I could hear him breathing, a horrible raspy sound. I crept over to the driver's door and there he was, all blood and bone and glazed over eyes. I should call someone, I thought, but fear had swallowed me whole. My life would be destroyed. I was a drunk driver and I had ended someone's life. It was all my fault. I didn't know if he had kids, if he was married or alone. Maybe he was a bad person. I tried to tell myself, and I had done the world a favor. Why was he out so late anyways? But no matter what I told myself, I knew what this was. I was a murderer, and I couldn't face that. I'll tell the police how I watched him die. I watched until he took his last breath, my fingers wrapped tightly around my phone in my pocket, and then I drove away. I'm about to report myself. I just wanted to put this out there so someone could hear this story and maybe think harder about their decisions. Everyone wants to say they know exactly what they'd do in a bad situation, how they'd handle it. But I know firsthand that isn't true. Everyone is a coward. I hope when I'm locked away, he's at peace. I hope his children live long, happy lives. I'm sorry. That's the end of the story. Welcome to the part of the show where I say YouTube hates us. Let's like this video, subscribe if you're on YouTube, and subscribe for more because we can together stick it to the algorithm and maybe I will be able to sleep at night and not seethe about this algorithm. But if you're anywhere else, I just thank you for listening and choosing this story when you have so many options to choose from. If you'd like to support this channel, you can do so on Patreon. Discord, yeah, that exists too. If you'd like to come hang out with the community and talk with us, you could do that. It's pretty chill. You can just come and go. I mean, whatever, but it's nice to have you there. But I think that's it. Hey, if you would like to submit your story, go to storiesaftermidnight.com where you'll find a link to do so. And the wall, trademark. But I think with all that said, that is everything. So thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed yourself. And we will see you in the next one. Take care now. Bye-bye then.